Joining me now here in the Skyline studio is Mike Carbonagi. How do you say this? I'm sorry. I keep putting the R in the wrong place, Mike. I apologize.
You should see some of the junk mail I get. Carbonagi.
Mike Carbonagi, who is on the Cook County Board of Review currently, but he's also a candidate for Cook County Circuit Clerk. Mike, thanks so much for joining me this morning.
Thanks for having me here.
You have proposed, obviously this is now an open seat with Dorothy Brown not seeking re-election. You are the Cook County Democratic slated candidate to replace her in the campaign for this open seat. And you proposed a series of numerous reforms for this office. And I think for people who are familiar with the office, this is an office that's in desperate need of updating, and not just technology, but just in culture.
If that's a
fair statement.
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
why don't we talk about some of these? You mentioned one thing is transparency.
Yes.
What are we talking about here?
Sure. So as you pointed out, you know, we're laying down our marker for reform here. It's an office, the clerk of the court's office, that is still stuck in the 20th century. You have to bring carbon paper to the courtrooms to write out your orders. Nobody likes it. The judges, the parties, nobody wants to be in court in the first place. And when you're there, the process shouldn't be made simpler. And really, our staple poles here of our reform: technology, transparency, and talent, and then also social justice. And as to transparency, we want to take a look at the fees and the fines that go to the court. Cook County has some of the highest court fines and fees in the country. Those can be a real barrier to access for folks who need to go to court to receive their justice. And it's interesting, the Illinois Supreme Court last year issued a report, and they looked at fees and fines, and transparency came up because they said, well, people are more willing to pay for a fee if they understand what it goes for, as to a fine where they don't understand why they're paying the fine. So part of that is explaining to folks who use the courts, what are the fees? And then for the court itself, do we need to charge all these fees? Do we need all these fines?
Well, I was going to say, I mean, covering Springfield, that there's always a constant kind of slapping on another fee or fine to go to some dedicated cause. And, you know, it starts, you know, looking like a laundry list on some of these cases.
Yeah, right now the fees and fines have gone up. So if you go to the courts right now and just want to plead guilty on a moving violation, it's $254 just on fees and fines. You want to come in and say, I did it. First of all, you can't do it online. The clerk of the court system doesn't allow you to pay your moving violation online. So you have to take a half day off work, go to traffic court, step up, say, I just want to plead.
It's already costing you for not going to work, plus what you're paying for here.
Yeah, and plus you get it stamped guilty. You go in, you wait in line to go pay $254 to pay guilty. So you've taken time off work, you have to show up in court, you have to pay in person, and it's $254 just right off the bat. That whole process needs to be rethought out. You can use your phone to buy a car. You should be able to pay a moving violation on your phone.
How much of that, I mean, does that require approval of the court?
So the Illinois Supreme Court has implemented e-filing as the law of the land. The Cook County Clerk of Court's office has been slow in executing that, administering that. I think part of that is the leadership.
Glacially slow,
indeed. You know, I spent most of my career in the federal courts. I used to be a federal prosecutor, and then I was a law clerk for a federal judge here. And so the federal courts have had electronic filing for 30 years through a system called PACER. It's not sexy, but it's durable, and it gets the job done, and there's no reason we can't move to an all-digital system.
I mean, that to me is just the stunner of things, is that it's still so antiquated.
Yeah, I mean, at the Board of Review, or as you mentioned, I've been a commissioner, and we when I came to the Board of Review 8 years ago, to file a property tax appeal for your home, you had to get a paper form in triplicate. We moved that to an all-digital platform, and now 93% of our property tax appeals in Cook County are filed online. We've given tens of thousands of square footage back to the county. Meanwhile, the clerk of the court's office just spent $24 million to build a document warehouse in Cicero. So it's paper for now, paper for the future. I mean, we need to take a look at digital solutions to get rid of these warehouses.
I don't think we need to spend $24 million for cloud storage.
Absolutely. No, and that's an opportunity. Let's take a look at all the paper. Let's identify it. Let's back scan it. Let's do optical character recognition. Let's put it online. And back to transparency, let's say what we've got. Cook County has this great open data initiative right now where we work with all, not just the Board of Review, but all the offices in Cook County to say, all this great data we've got, is there a way to take a look at it? If there's non-sensitive data that's in the court system, let's get that scanned electronically so folks can go through that all and see what we can learn.
Yeah, I mean, I would think there's, you know, some great value in having access to all of that, and access that you can easily get to rather than trying to hunt down pieces of paper in a warehouse.
And we've seen it right now. When you talk to the judges and the practitioners right now to step in, when they have a case step before them, and I've talked to a number of judges and lawyers who are practicing in Cook County, the process is slow, and it's not fair to their parties. And again, it's really not fair to the people who go to the courthouses to receive their
justice. It's not fair for the justice system.
Exactly. And if everybody else is doing their job, the prosecutors, the defense bar, the judges, the holdup shouldn't be the administrator of the courts who's keeping the paperwork together. That should be a seamless process.
That should just roll right in.
You shouldn't even know where we're operating. The clerk of the court's office should be operating in the back room smoothly, and so you don't even know they're there, instead of being up front. I mean, the other example I give to folks is, you know, the real practical effects it has on people. So the State Appellate Defender's Office is the agency that appoints counsel if you've been convicted for an appeal. They'll take a look at your case, and if they believe you have a case that merits appeal, they'll appoint a lawyer. There are 600 individuals in jail right now who are the state appellate defender has appointed a lawyer to them, but they can't get into court for their appeal because the trial record isn't complete. So they've got a lawyer, the judge wants to docket the case for a hearing, but the trial record isn't there, and they're still in jail. Every year, the state appellate defender sends a letter over to the chief judge to say, help us. We've got hundreds of people waiting in jail, but the clerk of the court can't get the record together. That's unacceptable.
We're speaking with Mike Cabanargi. He is a member of the Cook County Board of Review and candidate for Cook County Circuit Clerk. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, the Chicago Tribune. Speaking with Mike Cabanargi, he is a candidate for Cook County Circuit Clerk, and we're talking about some of the proposed changes and modernization in the office. I have to tell you, one thing I thought was interesting, eliminate patronage jobs.
Yeah.
I never thought I would see that as a proposal.
From the clerk of the court's office?
Yes.
Public employees, whatever office you're in, owe a duty of loyalty not to the office holder but to the public. So again, this gets back to taking a look at the office and bringing in transparency, technology, and then ultimately talent. On day one, we'll do a forensic investigation. Before I was at the Board of Review, I spent many years as a senior attorney and a prosecutor with the Securities and Exchange Commission, and I've seen how valuable it can be to bring in a third-party forensic investigator looking for specific instances of misconduct, but also taking a step back and looking at procedures and policies. And again, I think that's going to pull back the curtain on, do we need all the jobs, and is everybody's job titled? You know, people unfortunately look at automation and think that you're starting with as it's a tool for job loss. At the Board of Review, when we digitized our system, we weren't looking to eliminate jobs. We were looking to do our jobs better. And part of it is, are people's jobs titled correctly? Do they have the correct duties and responsibilities? Do they have the correct organization chart? So again, that gets back into, on day one, with a forensic investigator coming in and working with me and the leadership team, is everybody doing the right job? And if you can if you can't walk up to somebody in any job, private sector, public sector, pick up a piece of paper in front of them and say, what does this paper mean? What does this do? Who do you report to? If they can't answer those questions, why do I need them?
That could be a full-time process just of doing that, the organizational charts and whether people are you know, supposed to be where they're supposed to be.
Yeah, and it's and again, at the Board of Review, when I was building our digital system, and it's one of the reasons I want to be the clerk of the court, it's not that we didn't, for that year, hear the appeals for 1.3 million properties in Cook County while we were building a digital system. We had to do both. My hearing officers and analysts and I were still reviewing all the tax appeals. Meanwhile, we're building this new IT infrastructure. You have to do both. And as you mentioned, we're going to have to implement new technology, implement transparency, identify good employees, identify bad employees, recognize and reward the talent, get rid of everyone else. You have to do everything at the same time. Meanwhile, being the clerk for one of the largest consolidated court systems in the country.
Mike, I want to ask you a Board of Review question, and this is because of something that I saw recently in the news involving Fritz Kagi, the assessor, involving this property is involving the northern suburbs of Cook County, and incorporating the use of floodplain and concerns of that in the assessment of property. And what I'm seeing is these are some very very expensive pieces of property that are going to be seeing massive reductions in their assessment because now a floodplain map is being incorporated as a factor in the assessment. And ultimately, I guess this comes to the Board of Review.
Exactly.
Can you tell me what's going on here?
Sure. So I think it's, taking a step back, I think it's good for the assessor to use more and better data whenever possible. There's a lot of data points that are available, and the assessor is trying to implement more data when possible. So in this situation, what happened is, as I understand it, was the assessor had opened and closed a number of townships for appeal, and while we was doing the new Trier Township, realized that the FEMA, flood plain maps were available.
Easy for you to say, yes. FEMA floodplain maps.
When your name is Kevin Argent, you better have words roll off your tongue. The FEMA floodplain maps and implemented them in his model. And again, to your point, it's important to realize the assessor does is macro and the Board of Review is micro. He's using a mass assessment model and he's plugging in data.
It's like a template.
A template, exactly. And in this case, approximately 1,100 homes in New Trier would get a reduction. The problem was he had already closed New Trier and sent the final values to the Board of Review. And in this situation, he said, well, let's go with what's called a certificate of correction process. So the certificate of correction process sends over a paper file with some analysis and a cover sheet. We get about 30 to 40 of those from the assessor a year. It's really kind of fat finger errors, key punch errors. But in this case, it was 1,100. So we talked to the assessor. Our staffs have been talking, working through whether the certificate of correction process is really the best way, or should we just have a regular hearings and appeals on these individually? I think my colleagues and I are thinking it fits best if we just have these files come to our office as individual files, and we'll have individual hearings on them.
On a case-by-case basis.
Exactly.
Because, I mean, we are talking about, you know, multi-million dollar properties that would see multi-million dollar reductions, and I would have to assume, you know, when you, the market value for those homes, the market hasn't been hurt by the fact that they are located in a floodplain.
Right, and I think, you know, one argument we're going to hear and we have to have a conversation with the appellants on is, how is that floodplain data not cooked into the sales price? You purchased a home in a floodplain, and that evidence should be cooked into the sales price. Maybe it's not. Maybe there's evidence there we're missing. But let's hear about it in an individual cases, case by case.
Well, and I would assume in some of these properties, too, that there's significant mitigation efforts.
Great point, too.
That are cooked into the price of the house, too.
You know, some of these communities have spent a lot of money on infrastructure for floodplain management. So has that decreased the value of the home? Could it increase the value of the home? We want to take a look at these on a case-by-case basis.
One other thing I want to talk to you about, and we were talking off-air about this, is you're part of the delegate selection process for the Democratic Party of Illinois. When it goes to the fact of presidential Democratic nominating delegates that are going to the convention in Milwaukee. This is a very nerdy process. I understand that because I wrote about it. Yeah. And but I guess one of the factors is, unlike a usual election time, and next month, I mean October 5th, just next week, candidates for president and delegates start circulating nominating petitions to get on the March 2020 ballot. So there is a time situation here, but you have so many candidates, and you got to put together a slate of delegates to maximize your opportunity as a candidate. And I'm curious whether, you know, are people jumping on board with these candidates? And I get some of the feeling that among you know, some of the names, name people here in the party, no one wants to jump too soon because they're not sure who's still going to be in this thing, and nobody wants to back a loser.
Yeah. So in addition to my job as commissioner, along with Congressman Chuy Garcia and Robin Kelly and some others, I'm vice chair of the Democratic Party in Illinois. And one thing that we talked about as the 2020 presidential season was unwinding, or starting to gear up, I should say, was that we had heard from a lot of folks in 16 that the delegate process was opaque. They didn't understand how to become a delegate. So we decided to do, and in the end, we did approximately 21
hearings.
21 hearings throughout.
Or training sessions.
Trainings, yeah. And we called them delegate information sessions to tell folks just the fundamentals. To your point, you have to run to be a delegate. So the state party or local officials are not selecting you. Rather, you go to a presidential campaign and say, I live in the 5th congressional district. I live in the 9th congressional district. I would like to be a delegate for Biden, Harris, Warren, Mayor Pete, whomever. And they will review you. And then you, if you are selected, will get signatures on a petition and run as a candidate. And if you're elected, you get to go to the convention where, as we pointed out, you have to pay for your hotel.
Yes,
room.
Indeed.
You pay for your meals. Sometimes people show up and go, but I thought the parties were going to pay my way. And we pat them on the back and we say, welcome to the inside of the party. You're paying for your own freight here. But it really, the level of excitement I've seen at these information sessions, I've led a couple of them. I think the one we had at the Broadway Armory 2 weeks ago had 300 people. We had another one in Evanston that had 175 people. Folks are fired up for 2020. They're fired up to support our nominee, whoever she or he is. And the convention is really the starting gun for our party to come out stronger and take it on to Donald Trump in November.
It's quite a process.
It is, and all eyes are going to be on it.
Absolutely. Mike Carbonargi, he is the candidate for Cook County Circuit Clerk and current member of the Cook County Board of Review. Mike, thanks so much for joining me this morning.
Thanks for having me today.